Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, got
you. Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. We're going to do mailbag tomorrow, so make sure you get your voicemails, your text messages, in any questions, any comments you want to bring to the show, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. We're sponsored by Built Bar today and every episode in the month of May. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Matt, what's up? Welcome in. We normally do mailbag today on our Wednesdays, but I figured with the holiday and doing our first episode yesterday, we would push mailbag a day later because we got some things to get into. But first and
what's
foremost,
up,
how
what's
are
up,
you?
Bulls Nation? Doing well, man. Soon after we wrapped up yesterday, we got the official word that some things are moving forward in other professional sports here in the U.S. The NHL officially announcing via their commissioner, Gary Bettman, that they have decided upon at least a format when they return to finish their 2019-20 season. And it includes Chicago's beloved Blackhawks, who snuck in as the 24th team in the current NHL standings, which will have them as the 12th seed in a altered Western Conference playoff format. So we still don't know as far as, you know, time, place, TBD, when that's coming back. All we learned is the format that they all collectively agreed upon. And we're wondering if we might get something similar from the NBA later this week or sometime maybe next week. And again, not necessarily an official set of dates in a timeline of when it will happen, but at least perhaps an agreement between all those involved, the league, ownership, and Players Association as far as how they might go about it. So I'm excited, man. I would really love to watch some playoff hockey sometime soon. Although I think I saw some Bulls fans on Twitter talking about how the Bulls are also currently the 24th ranked team in the NBA, much like the Blackhawks were in the NHL. And I would be less excited about a 24th ranked Bulls team making a playoff appearance.
I heard our station was playing a promo right after they announced that the Hawks were going to be in the playoffs, and they phrased it as a unique set of circumstances, a unique playoff experience. And I was like, holy shit, the Blackhawks being a 12th seed is a unique set of circumstances. That's a long cry from what was supposed to be our decade of hockey. But hey, nonetheless, at least we're getting playoffs, and I think I'm more excited. Maybe it's just because I'm more out of tune with what's going on in the Blackhawks world, the NHL world, than I am with what's going on here in the NBA. Matt, I was reading over Mark Cuban's proposal yesterday, which I hate to say this, man, but if they follow through with what Mark Cuban is proposing, this puts the Bulls at probably the highest odds to make a playoff run if you consider the 20 teams he's thinking about pulling together for a playoff. So basically what it is you take the shittiest teams, you have all of them play five games, every single team in the NBA play five games as kind of a warm-up to conclude the season. That record after those five games would determine your playoff seeding 1 through 20. The bottom four teams would play a play-in game, and then 1 through 16 would be seeded to together. I believe he had a first round bye somewhere in there as well. But right now, if you look at the standings, and you take the top 10 teams in both conferences, dude, the Bulls are only one spot out of the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference right now. And with five games left to play, I mean, there's a lot of shuffling that could go on there. So I just had to laugh at that, the idea that if that is the type of plan the NBA is going to be heading towards, and that's one of many that they're coming up with, the Bulls could be in a situation where seeing Jim Boylan coach in playoff situations, which I just find absolutely hilarious.
Nah, man. I'm gonna take a hard pass on that. I wonder if Bulls players would want to do something like that. I'm not sure if you caught, Satoransky did like an Instagram live earlier today or yesterday. And he was talking about the different circumstances in which he would want to come back. And, because like earlier, like a month ago, when players were, in lockdown and not sure what was going on, like I remember Satoransky had some different comments about like he wished that the league would just call the season so that he could go home, as opposed to just kind of being stuck around here. So, I think players would react differently to that scenario. I'm not worrying about it though, because I think it's one of the more unlikely scenarios to play out. I think if they do expand into some different playoff format when they bring teams back, I think 16 or 20 is a lot more likely than 24, or certainly all 30.
It's funny that you bring up Thomas Satoransky, because I just saw a story published about an hour ago from Rob Schaefer from one of your buddies at NBC Sports Chicago, talking with Thomas Satoransky. And he, there was this comment that we talked about maybe about a month ago where he was like, dude, I've got family that still lives in the Czech Republic. Like, none of my close family lives here, and I'm still waiting to be able to actually go overseas and have this called an off season, so I don't have to deal with the difficulty of coming back over and coming back to the United States, getting the visas all squared away. And with the coronavirus going on right now, it's just, it's going to be a huge, huge obstacle, not only for the NBA, but for the NHL too. You've got two teams, well, more than two teams in the NHL outside the United States. And same thing with the NBA. You've got one team in Toronto too, which is, I think, going to make things difficult as well. So I can understand it from the player perspective as somebody who lives overseas and wants some type of decision made. But I wonder too about every guy, and I'm sure every guy's situation's a little bit different. Guys like, I don't know, Chandler Hutchison, or maybe even Wendell Carter Jr. or Otto Porter, for that example, maybe they do want to come back for 5 or 7 games because they haven't gotten any playing time, or they've been dealing with injuries. So maybe they would want to come back for 5 to 7 games and see if they can do something with a quasi playoff appearance, if that's something that's going to be a part of all of this. But I don't know, man. I just go back to the idea of having all 30 teams in one location for 5, 7, 10 games. I just don't see why that is worth it. But again, you're talking about the financial incentives that back a lot of this. A lot of these TV broadcasters have money still committed to the 2019-2020 season that they haven't gotten paid out for yet. And it also factors into the salaries. So there's like a million different factors that play into this.
Yeah. And I would recommend to our listeners to, if they haven't already, check out the parts 1 and 2 of the Zach Lowe and Woj pods crossovers. Part 1 is on the Low Post and part 2 is on the Woj pod. They dropped yesterday and today, and they get into a lot of the different ins and outs of what is most likely to happen, what still needs to happen. And to me, a lot of it still is, it's been about this since day one, and it remains to be about this. It's about testing and the availability of testing, and just how many people would require testing to bring this league back, even in a bubble in Florida. And I think that's why I still think the most likely scenario is the fewest teams possible makes this actually happen and can get them to finish the season. Because when you talk about bringing 16 teams back to finish the season, or 24 or 30, it's not just, the 15 guys on the roster and the coaching staff. It's everybody else involved. that would require testing, regular testing. And to me, it becomes a pretty obvious numbers game to say there is a way that we can make this a lot more feasible and a lot more manageable if we limit the number of teams.
Did you see the story about the MLS? Basically put out a release and said, anybody who leaks anything to the media about our plans to reopen, to restart the league, will be fined up to $1 million, and basically scolded everybody and said, hey, specifically The Athletic, do not leak anything to them. And sure enough, like 8 hours later, the entire release was leaked to The Athletic. And part of that, though, was the plan to split Walt Disney World basically in half and let the MLS use half of it, half the resorts and lodging to kind of quarantine and use it for the league, and also use half of the space for the NBA. Apparently there's enough room to do both where it would be safe enough for that to happen. So, I mean, that would kind of make sense. I get that you're mixing more teams and more players from different leagues in one contained area, but it's better than kind of separating it all different places. And like you were talking about with the NHL, I find it hard to believe that Chicago is going to be one of those places, considering the rules we're still under. I mean, the state hasn't even lifted the stay-at-home order yet here in Illinois. So the idea that the NHL would use the United Center or multiple arenas around the Chicagoland area as soon as, I don't know, July or August, it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense for me in terms of the NHL. But the NBA, I think, is... It's pushing closer and closer now that we have a plan with the NHL, and the MLB continues to go back and forth with its players and owners. The one thing that the NBA, I can tell right away, does not want to do is separate and make fans pick sides, whether it be the players or the owners' sides. And you can tell Adam Silver is being very careful about what he's saying to players, what he's saying to owners, what he's saying to the media, and kind of allowing players to express them the way he normally does, which I find fascinating. So I'm curious, even with some of the backlash, like Damian Lillard saying that if I'm not in the playoffs, I'm not playing, I'm not coming back for a season. I wonder how many athletes agree with him and will continue to come out and express those types of feelings, because we've heard it from European players already.
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of players probably agree with Dame and just haven't been as vocal as he's willing to be about it. And I did see he was doing some interview on, I think, Twitter Live earlier today that I haven't watched yet, but I'm going to go back and listen to it, because he expanded upon those thoughts. Of course, it was just like one quote with a couple of sentences that made a bunch of headlines earlier this week. And he has since talked about that further, saying, of course, you know, he would love to come back and play if the option and possibility of a playoff berth was possible, but not if it wasn't possible. But, you know, Jordan, we got something else that we should probably talk about as far as what's going on with the Bulls and whether or not they're returning to business. Because we all believe that if they do come back and play some regular season games in some form, that Jim Boylan will still be their coach. And our guy Joe Cowley was on your station, 670 The Score, just the other day with his latest updates on Boylan, the Bulls coaching situation, and a little bit more insight with the departure of one of his assistants, Sean Respert.
Indeed, this is really, really good. Before I get to that audio, and we want to play it in full just because there's so many little bits and pieces in there that I find very interesting, I want to tell you guys about Built Bar. Mentioned it at the top of the show, been mentioning it every single show in the month of May, and want to thank Built Bar for sponsoring the Locked On Podcast Network and Locked On Bulls specifically here. A special offer on top of the Locked On promo code that you guys have been hearing the last couple of weeks, which will get you $10 off any of your orders at BuiltBar.com. They're offering $5 off of every single box of bars when you purchase from BuiltBar.com. $5 off on top of the $10 you would get with the Locked On promo code. So that's $15 off to try Built Bar. Low calorie, low carb, high in protein. It's the perfect meal replacement, something maybe you need to hold yourself over in between meals. Maybe you just need a snack. Maybe you're too busy to deal with having a sit-down lunch or dinner. Whatever the case may be, Built Bar is there to get you through the day. I'm looking right now, Matt, at the Toffee Almond Bar. It has 18 grams of protein, 7 grams of fiber, 5 grams of sugar, 7 grams of fat, and only 160 calories. It's covered in 100% chocolate, and Built Bar is releasing four new flavors. Four new flavors on top of the 16 flavors that they already have released on their website. So it'll give you the option to basically go there and pick out any of the flavors you want to try and find out which ones you love the most. I was talking about the peanut butter and chocolate one that I really like. The double chocolate brownie is very good, and the mint chocolate brownie is fantastic as well. So go to builtbar.com, builtbar.com. Use the promo code locked on for $10 off your order. If you do decide to order, tweet at us at locked on bulls and at bar_built and let them know you're supporting the show. Once again, builtbar.com. Use the promo code locked on for $10 off. All right, Matt, let's get to that Joe Cowley audio, because there is a lot to talk about. So yes, he was on with Dan Bernstein show on 670 The Score yesterday morning and gave us a little bit of an update about what's going on with this actual current Bulls team.
Here's what's going on behind the scenes from the people I've talked to and the sources I've talked to. They're ready to move on from Jim Boylan. Now, the thing in this is timing and how to do this. And, you know, the NBA's reached out to beat writers for each team, whether it's through PR or their own, just to get a survey of which beat writers would be willing to go to Orlando if they get this thing up and running for all the teams, not just, you know, because they don't know really what the format's going to be. If you're Jim Boylan, the best-case scenario for you is there's somehow a play-in tournament with all the teams, and he goes on a deep run and really impresses his bosses, and somehow the players show some joy. That's Jim Boylan's best-case scenario. The problem is, it's probably not going to work that way, just when you look at the logistics of the timing of how this thing has to be spaced out and all the moving parts that are being brought to Orlando, and the fact that they probably want to have as few as people to keep an eye on as possible. So what I think is they're just going to go with a postseason or maybe a postseason play-in 7 through 10. And again, that doesn't involve the Bulls. So what you have with this front office is they have to say, okay, ideally, we've talked to the players. We've publicly come out and said the two things that are most important to us are players first and winning. Jim Boylan doesn't check either of those boxes. He just doesn't. Fair or unfair? I mean, he's throwing his job on, well, I did what was asked of me. I established an identity. They wanted a defensive identity. I did that. You did.
Yeah, the identity's kind of bad at basketball. Bad and dumb is the identity.
Here's the thing. There's two things. They did have they were top 10 in defensive efficiency, but it was kind of a gimmick defense. You go three guards out there, you're going to get steals. You're going to steal turnovers from the other team. You're going to steal possessions from the other team. So your defensive efficiency is going to look good. But let's look at the back line. Let's look at the defense at the rim. They were terrible in rebounding. They were terrible in blocked shots. They were awful in opposing field goal percentage inside the paint. I mean, so yes, you did steal possessions and have a high defensive efficiency, but you didn't have a great defense and you didn't win games with that defense. Those are the two indictments on him. So I see what he's doing and how he's trying to spin it, but the decision, from people I talked to, the decision is all but made. This is just trying to say we gave him the fairest look. We gave, as small as the sample size was, we watched how he interacted with the players. We watched how he coached, if it is 5 games or 15 games or however the format's going to be, and we just don't think it's good enough. And we respect that Michael Reinsdorf and Jerry Reinsdorf and John Paxson like this guy, but we're going to go ahead and move on from him. That's the ideal situation of how they want this handled. It's just a matter of tact right now. The decision's made, it's just a matter of tact. Saying we are giving every department a fair shake and everybody a fair chance, as long as their contract wasn't up May 30th, which obviously was the case with Tanaka and Respert and guys like that that they moved on from.
I was going to ask about that. So that was strictly the convenience of having the contract date then?
The Tanaka one was, obviously they want to bring in their own medical people. His contract was up. Chip is a Paxson guy, is an old school guy, and is going to stay, obviously. And so Tanaka, unfortunately, just had bad timing with his contract and the fact that this front office wants to bring in their own medical guy. So, you know, there may have been some other things that went into it. But you know, when you talk to the players, they all like Jeff Tanaka. I think he has a good reputation around the league. He'll find a gig. The Respert thing, yeah, Sean Respert wants somewhere else and I think wants to go the coaching route of college, and I think wants to be a head coach. But there were other things involved there. And Jim found out that Sean was not happy, went to media people to express that he was not happy, and Jim had a say in that of, hey, let's get rid of this guy because, you know, they gave him control of the coaching staff for now, and that's a move he decided to make. But Sean was not happy with the direction of what assistant coaches were allowed to say, how much input they have, and it was kind of a mutual thing, but Jim made sure that Sean wasn't around anymore.
Pretty good 4 minutes there from Joe Cowley. The idea that, I mean, is it that all that surprising, Matt, that some of the things that Jim Boylan was allowing or not allowing assistant coaches to do on the bench is an indictment in his end, which it blows my mind, first of all, because think about all of the freedom he was given under Fred Hoiberg and then the idea of him undermining Fred Hoiberg as well. And look, this isn't the only assistant coach that has been like, what the fuck is going on here in Chicago? How about the guy that they just brought in Fleming? Fleming even had some disagreements about how things were operated in game. And we even heard he was just kind of not giving Jim Boylan advice or not really putting his hands in game time and gameplay situations where he just let Jim Boylan kind of flounder. Are you surprised at all to hear that Respert was very aggravated with some of the things that were going on and wants to go the different routes, even if coaching is the majority of why he decided to leave? He wants to take the next step somewhere else.
Yeah, so I'm not surprised by that, and that's not necessarily as salacious of a detail that Respert just is looking to advance his career and become a head coach, you know, whether that be at the collegiate level or the NBA level, and thought that opportunity wasn't going to present itself in Chicago. The stuff that I find hilarious is the way Joe describes what Jim's actions were based on his objections to what Sean Respert was saying and doing when it came to perhaps speaking ill of the Bulls process to members of the media and expressing his frustrations. And then in turn, Jim Boylan said, okay, well, I'm gonna not let you talk. I'm going to not let you do this. I'm going to not let you do that. Because when I take a bit more zoomed out look at what's going on there, the first thing I think of is, hey, remember when we heard that story? Middle of the season, the Bulls are just floundering. They're coughing up late leads in every game. Jim Boylan saying the same bullshit over and over at the post-game press conference podium. And we heard this little thing about, yeah, the front office has instructed Jim Boylan to not talk about injuries of players and updates on players who are injured because he was giving misinformation, misleading the media, and not really doing a good job of talking about the injuries. So Jim Boylan essentially was told by his bosses, you're not allowed to talk about this. So Jim Boylan, who clearly has some kind of ego and some kind of insistence on establishing whatever dominance and authority he had left at that time, turns around and says, okay, well, who can I do that to? Who can I turn around and say, okay, well, my boss has just told me I'm not allowed to do this, so I should turn around to somebody who's one of my subordinates and say, you're not allowed to do this, to make himself feel bigger. That's how I read that situation playing out.
I'm not. You know? I'm not.
I do remember that. And it's just very bizarre that, I mean, I it doesn't surprise me thinking about even when Fred Hoiberg was launched, thinking about all the stories that we heard about then, like Boylan kind of undermining him there and wedging his way into the opportunity of as a head coach. I'm not surprised that some of that leaks over when he does become full-time and has the ability to make all the calls instead of being an associate head coach, which I found very interesting too. And I will say that since I'm speaking on that, Matt, and I just saw this update about Tom Thibodeau, I don't know if you got a chance to go back and listen to Tom Thibodeau with Woj or if any of our listeners did, but he made a very interesting, like, it was a one-off comment about when he was talking about the first time he interviewed for a bunch of jobs and kind of waiting for the Bulls job in 2010. he said, I got offered the opportunity to be an associate head coach in a lot of different places, and I didn't want to do that. I just don't believe in that philosophy. I don't believe in having somebody undermine you as a head coach. And I certainly didn't want to be that person to do it to a different head coach, which I found very, very interesting. I'm like, wasn't Jim Boylan an associate head coach here to Fred Hoiberg for about a season and a half before Fred Hoiberg got tossed? And sure enough, he was. So it's different philosophies, and maybe it works in some organizations, but clearly the guy that says success doesn't like it, and the Bulls are doing it here in modern
days.
It's
very good of you to point that out, Jordan. It's a very good point because, I mean, it highlights what can only be described as hypocrisy from Jim Boylan. Because from several accounts that I have heard, Jim Boylan was going behind Fred's back, complaining about the job Fred was doing to management and saying, I can do better. I can do better. I can do better. Give me the job. Give me the job. And, oh, gee, Jim Boylan doesn't like it when one of his assistant coaches is saying things about how we could be doing things better and this isn't being done properly. Like, what are you going to complain about, Jim? You did the exact same thing to Fred Hoiberg because you wanted his job. Yeah.
Finally, actually, the Tanaka thing, did that surprise you at all that he said that the players have good relationships with him and that he's done a good job and is regarded highly across the league, which we hear about every person that's let go from their job and looking for a new one? Did that surprise you at all? And I think it was just, what's funny is I think it's just the luck of the draw. Had Tanaka been under contract now, still, I think he still stays and maybe stays for the long term. It just so happened that it lined up with he needed a new contract, and they were like, you know what, we're just going to bring in our own guy.
Yeah, no, that didn't surprise me because of everything else I've heard about Tanaka from members of the media, people in that organization who have been there for a long time, as long as Tanaka has, and of course also players saying, yeah, we love Jeff Tanaka, great guy. I have not heard a single negative word said about Jeff Tanaka from those who know him well. You and I have talked on this podcast about a feeling like a need for change in the medical staff of this team, because maybe it's just a coincidence, but maybe it's not. And if you're bringing in fresh eyes and fresh bosses to run things, maybe give it a look and maybe turn some things over. So, no, I was not surprised to hear that. And I also believe, based on everything I'm hearing, that Jeff Tanaka will find himself another job with a different NBA team because he's that highly respected around the league. Jordan, before we move on, I wanted to tell our listeners about one of my favorite new ultimate life hacks. It's hard to find the time to sit down, read, and learn more. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on your personal development. There's an incredible app that solves this problem, and I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know info from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses it down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book on your commute, on your lunch break, or while you're working out. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, history to health books. It has the latest titles from bestseller lists, as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read, but you never quite had the time to. I like to use Blinkist like right when I wake up in the morning. I'm having my morning cup of coffee, maybe a little bit of breakfast, and before I start diving into all of the sports content I need to ingest that day, I get a little 10 or 15 minutes of peace and solitude and some different information from something else that I've heard about in the news, or maybe an author who just recently made an appearance in an interview with a book that sounded interesting. And I always, I bookmarked it, but I never actually got around to it. I like to do it to start my day with a little fresh ingestion of information. And here's the best part. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA, try it free for 7 days, and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial.
Matt, when I say Elton Brand, Randy Brown, Tony Kukoc, Rusty LaRue, Will Perdue, Dickie Simpkins, Corey Benjamin, BJ Armstrong, and Fred Hoiberg. What does that make you think
of? Makes me think of the Y2K Bulls.
I love that you refer to them as that. That's funny. So the Locked On Podcast Network, across every single show on the network, is doing this week. So we thought we would contribute in a Bulls way, talking about going back and flashing in time to one particular year. This year, we decided to go to the year 2000, talking about the Bulls specifically, what was going on that year and what was going on with the team. Matt, I'm just looking at this roster and holy crap, is it garbage. And some of these names are hilarious that are on this squad. Meta World Peace was a rookie at the time. Ron Artest, Elton Brand was a rookie at the time. And from what Joe Ostrowski was telling me, Corey Benjamin was super hyped at the time and ended up being a bust. So I guess from your perspective as a Bulls fan coming off the dynasty, what was it like to be a Bulls fan in that specific year? Can you remember anything vividly?
I mean, what I remember was trying to get excited about Elton Brand and a number one pick from a blue chip program like Duke, because that was the really hard part about the dynasty ending and that lockout Jordan season in 98-99 that, of course, has gotten so much conversation recently because of MJ's comments on The Last Dance and whether or not to bring the dynasty back for one more run. But because the Bulls won the title in 98, they didn't have that lottery pick waiting for them to start the rebuild. They had to go through that first awful year. And yeah, it was a shorter year. But and it was like, I remember being a kid who was like, oh my God, we finally got through this disgusting grind of a 98-99 season and we finally got our reward and the Bulls get themselves the number one pick. And I remember watching Elton Brand at Duke being like, wow, this kid is good. So I was really excited. And, you know, lo and behold, Elton Brand is a stud that year. He, you know, he averages 20-10 as a rookie. 20-10 as a rookie, which was just... And, he started 80 of 82 games, and I thought, okay, here's a piece we can build around. But unfortunately, the other pieces around him were just absolute dog shit. Like, it was unwatchable. So much so that, Bulls fans this season are saying, oh, man, like, what's our record? How bad are we? Here's a fun fact for you, Jordan. The Bulls' final game of the millennium, December 27th, December 30th, 1999, at Minnesota Timberwolves, the Bulls lose 94-76 to drop to 2-25 on the season.
2-25. Oh my! Could you imagine the meltdown now if the Bulls started a season 2-25? I'm looking back at the draft, Matt, in 99-2000, and we did, funny enough, we did get a question about this in our mailbox, and maybe we can answer it tomorrow, but it was asking us to go back and redraft this specific era and see where we would draft guys, and specifically who the Bulls would draft. So the Bulls drafted Elton Brand at number one, and they took Ron Artest at number 16. That 16th pick was coming from Phoenix. But the guys drafted after Elton Brand include Stevie Franchise, Baron Davis, Lamar Odom, Wally Zerbiak, Rip Hamilton, Sean Marion, Jason Terry, and Corey Maggette. And then after Ron Artest, the notable names after Ron Artest include Andre Karolinko. And honestly, that's about it. That's about it to conclude that first round, because the names after that are not all that great. So I think the Bulls drafting Ron Artest was really good there. The Elton Brand pick probably wasn't all that bad. I mean, Elton Brand ended up being a really solid player for the Clippers in his career. It would have been interesting to see if he would have stayed in Chicago, how that team would have phased. But what if the Bulls would have decided to draft Stevie Franchise or Baron Davis instead? Do you think that era of bad Bulls basketball, specifically like that cluster of 3 or 4 years, would have been altered differently? And do you think the leading years after that would have been altered?
I mean, it's an interesting question, and I would answer it with another question. How do we know that Jerry Krause wouldn't turn around and trade Stevie Franchise or Baron Davis for the prospect of getting Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry, just like he got rid of Elton Brand? I mean, Elton Brand was a rookie who averaged 20-10 how do you not believe in that as a building block? And Krause was so obsessed with this idea of Curry and Chandler. So, I don't know if they go in a different direction instead of Brand, that either of those guys would have proved themselves to be a piece worth holding on to when it was like the Bulls couldn't make up their mind who they wanted to start this rebuild around.
It's funny looking at those two trades, and I'm just looking at an article that lists the five worst Bulls trades in history. And number four is Elton Brand to the Clippers for Brian Skinner and draft rights to Tyson Chandler. The third worst trade is Ron Artest, Brad Miller, Ron Mercer, and Kevin Ollie to the Pacers for Jalen Rose, Travis Best, and Norm Richardson in February 19th, 2002. I always wonder about Eddie Curry, man. And same thing with Tyson Chandler. If they hadn't dealt Tyson Chandler, that dude could have been a building block here for years to come. And nobody really believed in, I don't know, I don't know if they didn't necessarily believe in him in here in Chicago. I was still relatively a younger fan at the time. And I was telling you, my first real Bulls memories are Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry days. And I don't know, I was so pumped as a Bulls fan, not watching the Bulls dynasty, to have those guys here. It, two massive big men that we thought were going to be staples and superstars here in Chicago for 10 plus years. It just didn't work out that way. Although Tyson Chandler is still to this day has had an amazing NBA career, I wish it would have worked out here in Chicago, because I always thought he was better than maybe what the Bulls or Bulls fans thought of him at the time.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely an interesting what could have been and what if scenario. But man, just thinking back to that season, it wasn't just the disappointment of what could have been with Brand, but I didn't enjoy it at the time because that team was so bad. That team won, what, 17 games? Yeah, 17 and 65. But going back and looking at that roster, I'm just reminded of so many hilarious details, like the fact that B.J. Armstrong and Will Perdue were both brought back for, like, you know, the veteran leadership return, you know, the Bulls from the first three-peat dynasty getting brought back, because then they did the same thing with Scotty like a few seasons later. They did the same thing with Charles Oakley a few seasons later. Other members of that team, let's see, John Starks having a four-game stint with that 99-2000 Bulls team, the former rival, hated rival for the New York Knicks. And then the other name from this roster that actually was getting a little bit of attention on Bulls Twitter recently is Corey Benjamin, who, you know, I think, Jordan, you and I may have touched on it briefly, was talking about that story of his agent being the agent of other, you know, big-time, big-name stars in the early 2000s of the NBA, McGrady, Duncan, names like that, who the Bulls were courting by lowballing and giving them offers that Corey Benjamin quoted them as saying, they're offering us peanuts. So many hilarious names. And, of course, the mayor, Freddie Hoiberg, proud member of the 99-2000 Bulls.
You know, what's funny about Fred Hoiberg is I tried to book him a couple weeks ago for the score. I reached out to Nebraska to just see if he would want to talk about that. I'm sure he doesn't want to talk about that era, but I thought it would have been funny to get some anecdotes about playing on that team, and not specifically about him coaching. They were super nice. They got right back to me, said he wasn't free at the time. It sounded like he was just more not interested in talking about that era of basketball, but did say to reach out back in the future if we want to do more of a casual overall interview with Fred Hoiberg. So we'll have to check in. Maybe we can get him on the podcast at some point. Eddie Curry is another one I'm trying to get on the podcast. I know I've mentioned to you probably since we started the podcast that I've wanted to interview him. He had a really, really good Players Tribune article that came out in January, and he did a whole video and stuff on it. It was really, really good. So I suggest people go back and read that. But Matt, let me finish and cap this off, this season off as we remember it, with this question for you. Out of the 30 teams in the NBA, how many teams did the Bulls go winless against in this season in 1990-2000 out of the 30 teams?
Oh, man. I'm going to guess 20 of them.
Oh, that was close. 17 out of the 30 teams in the NBA,
oh my God,
the Bulls didn't have a win against. They were 0-4 against Charlotte. They were 0-4 against Orlando, 0-4 against Philadelphia, 0-4 against Toronto, and they had a plethora of 0-2s against teams that were either not in the conference or only played twice in the year. But yeah, going back and looking that, I don't even think the only team that they had a winning record against that season was the New Jersey Nets, where they went 2-1 against the New Jersey Nets that year. They had two series with the Wizards and with the Celtics where they went 2-2. Everything else was losing records or they didn't have a single win. I take that back. They were 2-0 against the Clippers as well. So there you go. But I mean, 17 teams.
What does that remind you of? that reminds you of this season's Bulls, right? It was like we were undefeated or close to undefeated against the collection of Detroit, Atlanta, Washington, like these garbage teams that constituted, 75 or 80% of our total wins. And then we were just getting spanked by the rest of the league.
It's got to be a record for the amount of games in the fourth quarter or the third quarter that the Bulls blew last year, specifically the fourth quarter. The amount of times the Bulls were within 5 points or had a lead at some point in the fourth quarter and just absolutely melted down, that it has to be close to a record, because it felt like every single night this year the Bulls would get to the fourth quarter and we're great. How are they going to blow it again? When is did Jim Boylan use all his timeouts yet? Is it a flashback of the Bucks game where 6.5 minutes left and Jim Boylan doesn't have any timeouts? So it's got to be a record, but yeah, it does remind me. It gives me hints of even last year's season, the second year of the rebuild, where we were watching just god-awful teams being trotted out there. And like you and I in March were like, why are we watching these games?
Yeah. But, it's crazy to think about how bad that team was back in the year two of that rebuild, 99-2000. Because I'm looking at, the basketball reference page for that Bulls season. You know what they ranked in attendance across the league?
Sold out?
Number one in attendance in the NBA. Thank you very much, Michael Jordan. You're welcome, Jerry Reinsdorf.
Here's another fun little fact. As I was looking up the Bulls, I was curious where all the revenue comes in and what's like a large chunk of the Bulls' revenue every single year. Did you realize that roughly about $700 million of worth in terms of the Bulls' overall worth? They're worth $3.2 billion right now, but $700 million in revenue and overall worth comes from either the United Center or Game Day Ops, which actually kind of blew my mind when we started to see the Bulls fall out of the top 10 over the last 18 months or so in attendance. That's really where we saw a lot of waking up going. And a lot of fans, too, talked about how much money are they actually making on game day sales and at the gates and at actual games. It's a fuckload. So when fans stopped going to games, and they did in droves over the last year, it shows and it hurts in their pockets. So I was actually kind of surprised by the amount of money that they make from the United Center and what that is worth in comparison to their overall brand worth.
It's all crazy amounts of money, and it's kind of what the diehard fans who want to see the NBA come back are all waiting on is the different parties involved and a lot of who can save and who can salvage what money and who's going to make what money as they try and bring this league back. It's always about the dollars, man. But I'm proud of the Bulls fan base for doing their part to show this franchise that they weren't going to let them rest on their laurels anymore, and they were not going to keep throwing their money at Jerry Reinsdorf for a product that flat out sucked, and we finally got the change we were looking for.
The idea that they traded away within 2 years an NBA Rookie of the Year who, in Elton Brand, who shared it with Stevie Franchise that year, and then two players that they had drafted. Elton Brand was on the first team All-Rookie, and Ron Artest was on second team All-Rookie. The idea that they went in a matter of 18 months and traded both of those guys away, I think it just still blows my mind to this day. But yeah, that's a look back at the 1999-2000 season. We will continue to do this throughout the next month or so. We're going to dip into a couple of different eras, including 2010, including 1990, including 2005. So we'll take a flashback. If you guys have any memories specifically of those eras of maybe going to games, something that you liked about those seasons, something that stands out to you, hit us up, 331-979-1369. Or if you got a question, comment about the team right now, where the NBA is headed, if you want to see the Bulls go back and play games to finish out this season, and if it does come true and hold true, do you want to see a quasi play-in game for the Bulls in a playoff scenario? If you do, hit us up, 331-979-1369, or on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. That's going to about do it for us. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com